Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Palo Alto, A History of California, Capitalism, and the World by Malcolm Harris, uses one small place to tell a much bigger story. Rather than treating Silicon Valley as an inevitable triumph of innovation, the book traces how Palo Alto and its surrounding institutions became a proving ground for modern capitalism. Harris connects land, universities, venture finance, suburban development, and military research to show how prosperity in the region was built through deliberate policy choices and unequal power. The narrative moves from early California settlement and property regimes to Stanford University, the Cold War, and the rise of the tech industry, arguing that the Valley is not an exception, but a concentrated expression of wider economic forces. With attention to class, race, and labor, the book reframes familiar names and myths, linking local history to global consequences. It is a history that aims to explain how the world we live in was engineered and who paid the costs. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, land, property, and the foundations of power. A central topic is how control of land and the rules of property set the stage for everything that followed. The book emphasizes that Palo Alto did not begin as a neutral canvas for innovators, but as territory shaped by conquest, displacement, and the legal conversion of land into private assets. That conversion mattered because it created durable advantages for those who could claim, hold, and monetize property, while excluding others from the same wealth-building pathways. In this view, the region's later affluence is inseparable from early structures that turned geography into capital. Real estate values, zoning decisions, and the suburban ideal did not merely reflect growth. They produced it by deciding who could live where and under what conditions. Harris links this to the broader Californian pattern in which booms are propelled by speculation and protected by law, while social costs are pushed outward. By foregrounding land, the book challenges the common Silicon Valley story that places ideas and talent at the center. Instead, it argues that ownership and institutional control formed the base on which later industries could be built and defended, both locally and in the wider economy. Secondly, Stanford University as an engine of capitalism, another major focus is Stanford's role in shaping the political economy of the region. The book presents the university not just as an educational institution, but as a strategic actor that helped organize land, research, talent pipelines, and legitimacy. Stanford's decisions about campus development, partnerships, and intellectual priorities influenced which kinds of work were rewarded and which social goals were sidelined. Harris highlights how universities can function as anchors for regional growth while also reinforcing hierarchy, access, credentialing, and networks concentrate opportunity among those already positioned to benefit. The book also connects academic research to commercialization, showing how the boundary between public knowledge and private profit can be intentionally managed. This includes the cultivation of entrepreneurial culture and the creation of spaces where companies could spin out of research environments. By treating Stanford as a governing institution with long-term interests, the narrative reframes Silicon Valley's rise as coordinated and political rather than spontaneous. The university becomes a lens for understanding how elite organizations translate resources into durable influence. In the process, the book invites readers to see higher education as part of the machinery of capitalism, not merely a background supporter of innovation. Thirdly, military funding, Cold War research, and the tech trajectory. The book places military priorities and Cold War funding near the center of Silicon Valley's formation. Rather than a clean shift from defense to consumer technology, Harris traces continuities in money, infrastructure, and organizational habits. Government contracts and strategic needs helped build laboratories, attract engineers, and normalize a style of problem-solving tied to surveillance, command systems, and high-stakes competition. This matters because it complicates the popular idea that the Valley grew purely from private risk-taking. The book argues that public spending and state power provided early demand, reduced uncertainty, and shaped which technologies were pursued. It also suggests that the region's culture of speed, secrecy, and scale can be traced to defense-linked origins even when products later appeared in everyday life. By connecting local firms and research institutions to national security goals, the narrative shows how geopolitics and economics intertwined. This topic also frames a broader point about capitalism's relationship with the state. Markets are not separate from government, and the boundaries between them are often negotiated to favor certain interests. Readers come away with a clearer sense of how public investment can be socialized while profits and control are privatized. Fourthly, venture capital, startups, and the myth of meritocracy. Harris examines venture capital and the startup model as systems for allocating power, not just funding innovation. The book scrutinizes how investors, networks, and deal-making culture determine which ideas receive backing and which founders gain legitimacy. This approach questions the Valley's meritocratic mythology by showing how access to capital is often shaped by social ties, institutional prestige, and prior wealth. Startups may look like engines of opportunity, but the book argues they frequently reproduce existing inequalities, particularly through ownership structures that reward early insiders and financiers. It also explores how venture incentives push companies toward rapid growth, market dominance, and labor practices designed to maximize valuation rather than public benefit. In this framing, the celebrated characteristics of Silicon Valley, disruption, scalability, and relentless optimization, are not purely technological virtues, but financial imperatives. The book encourages readers to see how the language of innovation can obscure more basic dynamics of extraction and control. By linking the startup ecosystem to broader capitalist patterns, Harris portrays Silicon Valley as a concentrated laboratory where new management techniques, risk narratives, and monopoly ambitions are tested and then exported. The result is a critique that targets structures rather than individual entrepreneurs. Lastly, global consequences, inequality, housing, and the export of a model, a final key topic, is how the Palo Alto and Silicon Valley model reshaped life far beyond the Bay Area. Locally, the book ties technological success to housing scarcity, rising costs, and the displacement of working people. The same mechanisms that concentrate wealth, ownership of assets, privilege zoning, and wage stratification produce a region where prosperity and precarity coexist side by side. Harris treats these outcomes as features of the system rather than accidents. Globally, the book argues that Silicon Valley's business practices and ideology spread through platform economics, data-driven management, and the promise that technological solutions can substitute for political ones. As firms expand, they influence labor markets, media systems, and governance, often without democratic accountability. The narrative also links the region's dominance to supply chains and labor forces elsewhere, suggesting that the sleek consumer experience rests on hidden forms of work and environmental burden. By connecting Palo Alto's history to worldwide patterns of inequality and institutional power, the book aims to make Silicon Valley legible as a world-making force. The takeaway is that what happens in one affluent suburb can help determine how capitalism functions across borders and generations. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want more than a startup origin story, students of history and political economy, technology workers trying to understand their industry, journalists, policy-minded readers, and anyone concerned about inequality and housing in Housing and Housing and Creations. It can benefit a reader's life by supplying a clearer map of causation. Instead of treating today's tech economy as natural or inevitable, it shows how institutions, property rules, public funding, and investment incentives shaped outcomes that now feel unavoidable. That perspective can change how a person votes, organizes at work, thinks about education, or evaluates claims about innovation and progress. Compared with many similar books that focus narrowly on famous founders or single companies, Harris offers a longer timeline and a broader frame, linking local development to state power, capital formation, and global spillovers. The value is synthesis. It connects land and universities to defense research, venture finance, and the social costs that follow. For buyers weighing options, this book stands out for treating Silicon Valley as a historically constructed system rather than a parade of geniuses, making it a more durable guide to understanding the present and imagining alternatives. If you would like to support Malcolm Harris, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.